Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sama sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sama sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sama sambuddhassa. Samadhi mago asamadhi kumago ti. Many of you will recognize that quote as a saying of the Buddha. Very short saying, but very much to the point. It means that samadhi, in particular samma samadhi, the jhanas, is the path. No samadhi or wrong samadhi, such as asamadhi, is the wrong path, the kumago. No path at all. So that's a very central teaching of the Buddha, which I think very many of you who have read those suttas or heard them spoken will have impressed upon your mind, that the path has a central feature of samadhi. I think it is actually fair to say that the Eightfold Path culminates in samma samadhi in the jhanas, and those experiences of deep meditation are almost like the pivot point from which one can go off into the insights which lead out of samsara, which actually break you free from the delusions of impermanence of something or other, the delusion that there's a self there somewhere, the delusion there's some happiness to be found in the world. So to be able to break through those delusions, all the thinking in the world, all the reflections in the world, are not strong enough without the power which is given to the mind by samadhi. And this rain's retreat, as the previous rain's retreats, are going to be focusing just so much on the way to get those samadhi experiences, in order to train the mind so strongly that one experiences for oneself and what it's like to have a mind which is liberated from the body, from the five senses, from will, from movement, from doing. To know for oneself what it's like and why those states are just so crucial for the path to the ending of suffering. As the Buddha said again and again, it's from samadhi, samadhi paccaya yatha bhuta yana dasana, sometimes samadhi upanisa, yata bhutayana dasana. It is from samadhi, caused by samadhi, that we see things as they truly are. So, it's okay to read the suttas, it's okay to read books, to listen to talks, but you will never be able to penetrate to the Dhamma just by that much. One needs samadhi, the power, the depth, the stillness, to be able to see what these teachings really are about. So we focus a lot upon samadhi. And in particular this evening I wanted to focus on the role of the Iddhipadas with samadhi. Because in the previous instructions which I've been given, some of you get confused about how much to let go and how much to put forth effort, or what effort is required, and where is that effort supposed to be directed. Basically, what you should do, if anything, to gain those deep states of meditation. And a general principle is that, yeah, maybe at the beginning you have to do things, but the deeper you get in meditation, the less you have to do. To go deep in meditation, that's when the letting go has to be perfect letting go, where you sit there and just watch without doing anything whatsoever. However, in the early stages of meditation, sometimes a bit of chanda, even a bit of desire and will, can be helpful. At the very least, one needs to get that inspiration to be able to sit on your meditation cushion or stool to begin with. You'll never get samadhi if you don't sit or walk and actually put forth the energy, the time to develop the meditation. The thing which I remember from Ajahn Chattamala's talk last week was actually just give it time. Do as much hours of sitting, as many hours of walking as you possibly can during this retreat period. Because the longer you meditate, the more chance there is that something might happen. Even if you think you're not a very skilled meditator, the very fact you're inclining the mind away from activity, you're inclining the mind away from thinking, from doing, from moving, from talking, from distracting, from doing things, because you're moving away from that, that momentum of renunciation, of giving up, has to eventually build up power until it eventually carries you through to deep states of samadhi. One of those sayings of the Buddha, that samadhi is easy to obtain for those who have made wosagga an important aspect of their minds. Wosagga is letting go, giving up, abandoning, relinquishing. It's a very powerful sort of little statement by the Buddha. The more you relinquish, the more you let go, the more you move in that direction of abandoning, throwing away, simplifying, not accumulating, the more easy it is to gain samadhi. And as you meditate more and more in this monastery, as you get the ideas and mind trains itself to know that path into deep samadhi, it does become easier and easier. And it means that those deep states of meditation are more available to you, more accessible to you. So you can just rejuvenate your mind. You can re-energize it. You can go back to those bliss states whenever you want. And that's a promise of the Buddha for those who practice this path. But we have to start, and that's where the chanda is necessary, basically because we've already got too many desires running through our minds. It's the desires of our old habits. In this year, in this monastery, we have many people who are just coming into this monastery for the first 1 or 2 years. In this monastery this year, we've got many novices, as well as the Anangarika's laymen and lay visitors here. So it's a young monastery. However, it doesn't matter. Now is your time to train. It doesn't matter sort of how long it takes. You're here for this purpose and one purpose only during this rains retreat. Sit and walk. And walk and sit. We have the huts ready there. We have the support. We have everything as good as it gets to actually to support you physically. Your chanda must now be towards spending your time on the cushion, on the stool, whatever, however you sit, as much as you possibly can. Number one then, chanda. To actually to sit, to walk. You'll find quite naturally the more when you get into this, sitting and walking, walking and sitting, and doing very little else, you'll find the momentum does build up. You get up in the morning, you just want to go and sit, you just want to go and walk. It's not the case that you wake up in the morning and think, oh, let's have another half an hour, and just roll over. When you wake up, great, another opportunity to sort of have beautiful meditation. This is what you can expect when you actually put the time into meditation. And sometimes late at night, you just don't feel like sleeping. Just go on to very late at night, enjoying the full moon, enjoying the peace of this monastery at night time, enjoying the seclusion of the mind and the seclusion of the body. It becomes one of the great delights. You're becoming a real hermit, someone who just doesn't just stay alone physically, but stays apart, aloof, separated from the world mentally, but is going within. So the chanda, the desire, the force of the mind sort of goes towards resisting the old habits of the world. The old habits of the world is to go and talk, to discuss, to laugh, to associate. And the Buddha said, those who delight in associating with others, who delight in talking with others, will never find samadhi. We started our rains retreat, but still I've noticed, I've come down a couple of times, at the bowl wash, we're talking too much at this time. See if you can be quiet when you're washing your bowls. There's times when we come together, try and stop all this busyness. So when you come for your breakfast in the morning, you come quietly, nothing much to say. Sometimes if you want to talk to someone else, just write them a note instead of opening your mouth. It's much harder to write a note. A lot of times it's not worth it, so you keep quiet. At lunchtime, already sort of a little bit of, you get rid of all your business, 3 days later more business comes up. Don't do that. For 3 months don't have any business. Stop it. After lunch, you wash your bowl quickly, be quiet when you wash your bowl. And then just go back as soon as you possibly can. That way that you're developing this atmosphere of seclusion around you, and you carry that from your heart into the common areas, and you take that back again. You protect your silence, you protect your renunciation, you protect your mind, which is inclining, not just when you're in your heart, but inclining when you're here in the common areas, inclining towards peacefulness, to letting go. The things which are more important to you than conversations and all the other little business. What's really important to you is the reason why you came to this monastery in the first place, to get to those deep states of peace. So that way that when you return to your heart, you haven't got the echoes of those conversations. You haven't got just to deal with just the reverberations of what just happened. Because nothing happens. You come silently, you stay silently, and you leave silently. And silent without, silent within, as you come and go in this monastery. And as you do this at this particular time of the year, you'll find when you do sit down, you haven't got too much old karma to deal with when you first meditate. One of the reasons why people, they sit down and they can't get still when they first meditate is because you have to deal with the old karma. You can't just think that I'm going to sit down and control my mind just in this one moment. It's how you've been acting before will influence what happens when you sit on your cushion or when you start walking. If you've been heedless before, how can you expect to be heedful now? This is conditionality. It doesn't go according to your willpower. So your chanda, this sort of desire, should be to restrain the speech, to restrain the body, to restrain the mind. That's what chanda is. It is the desire to let go, to restrain, to stop, to protect, to guard, to be aloof, to be separated from the world. You incline the mind towards that, and then it becomes easy to meditate because you have that wasagga, that aloofness. It's hard for me because you get that aloofness in your heart and you're having a wonderful time. You have to come out and do things because that's my job as a senior monk. But sometimes you just, the mind is so still, you just, it's so hard. Go and answer a phone call, and it's all silly stuff, even though it's supposed to be important. You know, when you get very still, it's all silly stuff. Even the most important matters become silly when you know samadhi. What's the point of all this? Things come, things go, money comes, money goes. People live, people die. Big deal. But when you have samadhi, the stillness of the mind, that's really important. So, our chanda is there to stop things and to start the meditation. But you sit down there on your cushion and you let go. Your chanda says no to the past, no to the future. Such an easy thing to do, but so profound to develop this present moment awareness. Get into the habit of this, train yourself like this, become skilled in being present. Because then you can stop pretty easily. Now, if there is any job you have to do, any distraction you have, that distraction, as soon as the noise of the distraction stops, your mind stops as well. You don't have this lingering happens in the mind. Somebody says something and it keeps on lingering for hours or days afterwards. Something happens and the mind keeps on thinking about it for so long. It's crazy that people do that. And why? It is because their chanda wants to be distracted. This is what we mean by know that chanda. Know what, not just what the ego, what the self wants, but what's really happening, what it truly wants. Sometimes we can be in denial. We should see our chanda, our will. What does it really want? What do you want? So be mindful of that chanda. A lot of times, you know, you say, yeah, I'm going to meditate, but that's not really what you want to do. You want to sit down and fantasize or dream or fall asleep. So make sure that chanda, you know exactly what it is. And to make sure that chanda is not to distract yourself, not to sort of think of your old girlfriends or your old music or whatever else, not to sort of plan what you're going to do when you leave here or whatever, but instead get that chanda to renounce. The whole inclination of your meditation is to renounce, to let go. Renounce and let go of what? Be clear what you're renouncing. In brief, you're renouncing suffering. You're renouncing the khandhas. You're renouncing your body and all the senses and all the busyness of those senses. You're renouncing the world. That's what you're doing. So be clear, you're going to be a world renouncer when you start meditating. What is that world for you? You know, just all the things you think about, that's your world. Past and the future, food, sex, family, possessions, coming and going. That's your world. So renounce all of that. Just like we stop newspapers for the rains retreat. Those newspapers in your mind, throw them away and burn them. So you forget the past. They get into the habit, whatever's happened, it never bounces. I gave that simile years ago, I think it's in one of those books, having a mind like a padded cell. So any thought which comes up, any activity, any experience, it doesn't sort of bounce up and down in your mind like a ping pong ball. It just, this moment, it thuds against this padded and just stops there and then. It doesn't sort of reverberate at all. Any sound, as soon as the sound finishes, the mind finishes with it. Any feeling, as soon as the feeling stops, the mind finishes with it. Anything at all, as soon as it stops, you don't carry on having a conversation about it. You make no reports about your experience. As soon as experience is dead, you have the funeral right there, and you don't carry any coffins of the past or any ashes into the future. When you start to do this, it's so easy to get into deep meditation because you're not carrying out that past. You know, this is a fundamental part of the meditation technique which I give. I'm reinforcing it now because it is not something which is a simple, or it's a thing you can think, oh, I can do this, I can just pass over it. It's so important and so fundamental. And sometimes when I'm meditating, I just have to remember those initial parts, even in deep meditation. sometimes you have to focus a little bit more sharply on this present moment. The simile which I've given is sometimes when you're meditating and getting quite deep, you're not getting any further. And what I do sometimes is like focusing the lens just to make it a little bit sharp in the present moment, because I found that my awareness is smudged. It's smudged over a little bit of the past and a little bit of the future. It's not precise. It's not pure present moment. It's a tiny bit of what just happened and a tiny bit of what's coming next. And that's not enough sharpness to get into deep meditation. A little bit of focusing does wonders. So your chando is actually to let go of that past. Who cares about the future? Throw it away. You're in a beautiful situation here, especially those down the end of the line. You don't have to think or worry about anything. In this monastery, everything is done for you. Sometimes, you know, you think that the upatak is looking after the senior monks, but it's not that way. The senior monks are looking after you. Making sure you get well fed. Looking after the visitors, the telephone calls, the donations, so that you can have everything you want in this monastery, everything you need. You're being well looked after. Where else can you go and just have this beautiful condition to meditate and not have to do anything? To have all of your physical needs catered for, not disturbed at all. Other people looking after you. Now you're here. Don't throw it away. Throw away the past, throw away the future, but don't throw away the present. Because this is what happens. We throw away what's really important, and we just, you know, worry about the past or worry about the future. As Ajahn Chah said, that's similar I've been saying in Nolamara and Armadale, it's like a person who raises chickens, Ajahn Chah simile, and they go in the morning, they just collect the chicken shit, they don't collect the eggs. If you worry about the past, if you start to think about the future, you're just collecting chicken shit. You're not collecting the eggs, which is the present moment. So this is your treasure, to be now, to be now, to be now, to be now. How much craving can exist in the present moment? Just ask yourself. All wanting is about wanting something next. All expecting something is off into the future. All ill will, negativity is usually about what's happened a few moments ago. Just so many of the hindrances are just cut off at their root when you come into this beautiful present moment. Not only that, but when you come off into this present moment, your energy starts to rise. When you get that chanda just to abandon the past, abandon the future, that's what the chanda does. It's a desire to give up, abandon things, not to get something, not to expect something. It's a chanda to let go, simplify, throw away. When you start doing this, so the present moment starts to become beautiful, and the energies start to arise. You start to find out what mindfulness truly is. Everyone says, be mindful in your meditation, but what does that mindfulness truly mean? It means being fully present and being quiet. Mindfulness can only exist in the present moment. You're mindful of what's happening right now. And the thing is, with this present moment awareness, this style of meditation, that when you spend enough time cultivating that present moment, a mindfulness starts to become strong. You become energized, you become more aware, more alert. And this is actually where you can start to see with your mind what's going on. Without that basic mindfulness, it's a controlling faculty. You can't do anything. You don't know what's really happening. You think you do, but your mindfulness is quite dull. So thoughts come up in the mind, you think you're restraining, you think you're doing the right thing, but you're not. You keep making mistakes. It's delusion. You do need a strong mindfulness, a very sharp alertness, to be able to lead the mind in the way of the Dhamma. Many people think they're aware and they're mindful, but they're really half asleep. That's why they keep getting things wrong. That's why they don't succeed in their meditation. Basically, they don't know what they're doing. They're like a person who's blind driving their car. There's no way they can find the destination because they're blind. Blinded by the hindrances. Blinded by desire and ill will. They can't even see the desire and ill will happening. Blinded by restlessness. Blinded by spot and torpor. Blinded by doubt. When you come into the present moment, your eyes start to open. The eyes of mindfulness, the ears, you begin to hear more, feel more, see more. And it's great fun. It's joyful to be mindful. Because life appears more rich. People get depressed because there's not enough energy in the moment. Their mindfulness is so weak. But as you start to build up this energy of mindfulness, you start to become more joyful, more happy. It's an insight which not enough people talk about. The energy of the mind is your happiness, and this is how you build up that energy. Off into the past and the future, you're wasting so much happiness. It's like this great treasure. You want to be happy and you're wasting it. So if you really want happiness in this retreat, you want to have a good time, you want fun, you want joy, you want mindfulness, you want to get somewhere, stop wasting your time in the past and the future. Focus, focus, focus on the present moment now. And you can do that any time in this monastery. So when you're eating, when you're brushing your teeth, when you're washing, when you're doing any chore you have to do, when you get up in the morning, when you go to bed at night, every time you can bring the attention back to now, to now, to now. And if you keep doing this, you'll start to build up your mindfulness. Not only will you build up your mindfulness, the silence must come. Why do people talk too much? Because they don't want to be here. You don't want to actually feel. Even when you're eating, it's beautiful food, people don't even taste the food because they're thinking about the next morsel which is going to go in their mouth. Or they're thinking some sort of plan or some sort of song going through their head or whatever. They're not even really eating the food. Every time you put a morsel of food in your mouth, be there with it. Enjoy that food. It's very delicious food in this monastery. That's one thing you're allowed to really enjoy, every taste of every morsel of food. It brings you into the present moment, mindful, alert to what's happening now. It's one of those recognitions, having done retreats as a layperson, having taught many retreats, and tomorrow going to Singapore to teach a retreat. It's a strange thing which happens when you go on retreats. The food starts to taste delicious. Remember my first retreat I went on was in this in Cambridge. Still a student at the time. Still at the university there. And Cambridge University Buddhist Society hired these boarding houses. And maybe that many of you are not old enough, but boarding houses in university towns had a terrible reputation for their food. They were just yucky stuff, just dodge. And they never really put forth much care in cooking it. It was the worst of English food. However, on this retreat, I thought we'd struck lucky. This must be the best sort of boarding house in the whole of Cambridge, because that food was delicious. And I noticed that on all retreats which I've been on, the food is delicious, but it's not. I discovered the food. It's your mindfulness. You can taste more deeply. You can actually feel more thoroughly. You know much more what's going on because your mindfulness is becoming enhanced. Mindfulness is growing stronger and stronger it makes the food taste more delicious. I'm saying that because for those of you who want some sensual pleasure, go for that. It's just a start. It won't last, but at least you're building up your mindfulness. It's almost like a trick, like the Buddha sort of telling his cousin Nanda, if you really want to sort of have a really nice woman, just go for the women in the Deva realms. Just practice like this for a while and you get the Deva nymphs. That's what the Buddha did for Venerable Nanda. And of course, Nanda did practice like that. But you know, soon his insight came along and saying, oh, who wants Deva nymphs? It's much better to have Nibbana. So the same way that I'm using similar strategy. See if you can make your mind so mindful, so alert, the food tastes delicious. Because then you're beginning to develop the power of mindfulness for the present moment and silence. Things are so nice, you don't want to disturb them with sound. All thinking comes from discontent. Just investigate what I said there. If your thought comes in your mind, it means you're unhappy. You're discontent. If you're really having a great time, just thoughts just can't come up. You don't want the mind to move. Because right now, he's happy, you're blissing out. Why would you want ever to get rid of this? It's only through discontent that we're forced to move. So when you start to build up this energy of the mind, of mindfulness, it becomes blissful, it becomes silent. You see what I'm saying here? That mindfulness as it grows, becomes from the present moment, becomes still, becomes enjoyable, becomes silent. You're building up sort of the muscles which you will use later on for your deep meditation. Just through this deliberate practice. So this is where your chanda should be directed. This is what you should be telling your mind. Present moment awareness, please. Silence. Trouble is, though, that people don't know how to use that chanda. Come on, be silent. Come on, be silent. Be silent. You just keep interrupting yourself. You don't allow silence to happen. Come on, be silent. You're telling yourself what to do next. You're not in the present moment. So be sharp to this mind. Make present moment awareness and silence just important parts of meditation, the prerequisites. And then you understand where the chanda is really directed. You understand very clear what you should be doing, or rather what you should not be doing. Get that preliminary mindfulness guarding yourself from moving off into the past or the future. Get the energy of mindfulness strong so you're enjoying this moment. When you start to get that energy and that joy, the energy is the joy, joy is the energy, that's where the joy comes from. Just hang out in the present moment as long as you possibly can. Joy must come. Imagine Chitamala's story. You hang out not just on the meditation path, not just on the cushion, but hang out in the present moment. If you hang out there long enough, mindfulness and joy must arise. And when they start to arise, your mindfulness will start to become powerful and strong. Your joy starts to become strong. You're starting to have fun in your meditation. Fun in just being aware, being silent in the present moment. Now you've got the foundations strong. You've built up what's necessary. And then when you start watching the breath or doing loving kindness meditation, it's easy. Sometimes you wonder, why do people keep having struggle with their meditation? Why did some people meditating here for years and never got deep? What's going on? Because they just go off into breath meditation really quickly. Okay, let's just watch the breath. Come on. They use their willpower for the future. I'm going to get into breath meditation. I'm going to get into jhana. This is the one. It's going off into the future. Do it methodically. Build up the right energies, first of all. Even in the Anapanasati Sutta, the Buddha says you arouse mindfulness, first of all, before you even start watching the breath. What is it? Just to establish mindfulness in front of you. I think the sutta says, the usual translation. And this is actually what that means. Take the time to establish mindfulness, because if you put forth lots of time and lots of effort in establishing that mindfulness. And so you're really in that present moment, you're enjoying it, you've got energy, your mindfulness is strong. Then when you watch the breath, you are capable of doing the breath meditation. You are in the present moment, the mindfulness is strong, you can actually see the breath with your mind, you can feel it. You don't lose parts of it. You know, you don't have any trouble finding this breath and keeping your awareness there. Too many people say, they can watch the breath the first few breaths and then it disappears, or they get thoughts coming into mind, or they stray off, or they find themselves controlling, or it's not comfortable. It's because they have not followed those instructions. You have 3 months in this monastery for this retreat. Spend time, lots of days, just on the preliminaries, building up present moment awareness and silence. Build up the joy, the mindfulness in the moment, which is just so happy. Build that up so strong before you go off into the breath. You've got the time to do this. And when you start to do it methodically like this, you don't rush off into the future, into trying to be some whiz kid, trying to get enlightened this week so you can do something else the week after. Do it slowly, methodically, carefully. And this is where chanda is. Sometimes people mistake the chanda as like, right, let's go and do it. And do it speedily. That's not the chanda which leads to enlightenment. Has to be a wise, empowered chanda. And this is where you get the virya coming from. The energy of the iddhipadas, where you get the application of the mind. The mind, mindfulness is strong. And it's energized through this present moment awareness and silence business. And then when you want to start watching your breath, it's so easy to do. And the breath fills your mind. Because you're enjoying it. You already have the joy before you start. And when you put the breath right in front of your mind, that joy continues. You get more and more refined as you are focusing, giving up duality, going to unity. This is where that energy starts to really build up in strength. And all you do is just turn the mind, okay, breath now. You don't need to keep interrupting the mind with controlling thoughts every few seconds in your meditation. Once you have that degree of mindfulness and joy, and just so you're in the present moment, you're silent, so you can watch the breath easily, that's all you need to do, just say, watch the breath. Just shut up. You're giving this nudge to the mind. You're sending it in the right direction. And you find by doing this preliminary practice methodically, carefully, first of all, your mind becomes just so easy to instruct. It's like a well-trained mind. Like a well-trained novice, a well-trained anagarik. You say, can you go and get me a cup of tea? And they go down there and they're exactly the type of cup of tea you want. And you have to tell them to get some more sugar or less sugar. Because they're alert, they're mindful, they know. That's what your mind is like at that stage. You just say, go watch the breath. And it's just so happy to watch the breath. You don't have to struggle, you don't have to force. You don't have to compete with other thoughts or other distractions or other things you want to do. Just the mind just wants to do it. Because you've got energy, you've got joy, you've got stillness, you've got mindfulness, you've got peace. And you just start to watch this breath. And when you start going into unity, one-pointedness, the oneness, the one-peakness of the mind, you start saying, just let go of diversity. And that's when the great meditations start to happen. You just sit there and watch as if you just tell the mind, just go into letting go, to unity. And then you see what happens. And then just these beautiful deep states of meditation start to arise, stage by stage. Because you're not expecting anything, because you're in the present moment, the mind still retains that stillness. which keeps increasing the power. Because the power of mindfulness is increasing, you're seeing much more deeply. More energy means more bliss. The breath becomes a beautiful breath. It's a subtle breath because you're seeing right into the depths of it. The same way you can see the subtle flavors in the food, now you can see the subtle beauty in the breath. That's why I said enjoy your food for that one reason, because it's a training in subtlety. And then you really start to enjoy these deep meditations. And once you get to that stage, you make me very happy. Because then, you know, you're on the way. You're sitting there just a happy little meditator, getting lots and lots of joy. Going to the deep, beautiful breaths. And it's only a short distance. Okay, you come across these obstacles, but they're great obstacles you come across, because that's where you really see your attachments. You see the self, what the self wants to keep. You come across fear, and fear is just the self being challenged. But keep on there. The fear, just like the sickness, the dying, the death rattle of the self. That's what those fears are. Eventually you keep on pushing away there. You just get through those fears. It's only a little matter of time. Because the joy is just so strong, that just pushes you through. Pushes you on. Pushes you deeper. But just getting to that first beautiful breath stage. So you're enjoying the meditation. You sit there, just want to sit there. And you spend day after day, this beautiful breath. Maybe your legs get tired or aching. Now you get up. You just go walking in present moment awareness, silence, watching the feet move. You're just right in the present moment. You just don't want anything. You're not looking at the time. You're not trying to beat your record. You don't know how many minutes have gone, how many minutes are left. No thoughts going in the mind. You're just there right in this moment, just with the feet moving. Oh, it becomes so much fun. Not just fun for the sake of joy, but fun for the sake that this is going to lead even deeper. You're on the Eightfold Path. You're just going closer and closer to the jhanas and towards enlightenment. So this starts to get you really inspired. Things are working. The retreat is happening. Your meditation is taking off. And yourself is disappearing. But who cares? Who gives a damn when you're having so much fun? So the self just has got no chance left. Defilements, they're really threatened now. But they just can't get, they can't even scream your defilements because you're just having too much fun. Breath becomes so beautiful. Just walking becomes just such a lovely thing to do. You're in a different world. You're in the world of a monastery. You're in the Buddha world. You're in the world of the hermit. You're in the world of this inner happiness. You're in the world of that bliss which is better than sex. You're in the world which is the departure lounge for Nibbana. You're in that world of just bliss based on renunciation, which is just going to lead to so many insights. You're just going to become wise, whether you like it or not, whether you want to be a teacher or not. Just these things happen, just because you've got the power, the energy. You're in those places, the footsteps of the Buddha. Maybe not quite the footsteps yet, but you're getting close. It's only a matter of time when just nimittas just flash up in your mind and start blowing you away. They blow away your body, they blow away just the walls of this hall, they blow away the whole world, they blow away your body, they blow away the senses, everything's gone. Just beautiful nimittas just fill the whole mind. You don't know what day it is, what week it is, what year it is, you don't know who you are. You're not that anyway. Just so much has disappeared. And the more that's disappeared, the more free you are. This is what it means, a bliss of renunciation. The more you've given up, that's just the more bliss and ecstasy you have. And it's the mind, whether you think intellectually you understand, it's the mind recognizes this. It's the mind which becomes enlightened, not you. And the mind recognizes these things, that bliss, happiness comes from letting go. The end of suffering comes from renouncing past and future, renouncing doing things, renouncing being somebody, renouncing all of this coming and going and thinking and stuff. And you're just right in there, experiencing this, not thinking about it. But you're in the place from where the thoughts come afterwards when you try and describe what just happened. You're actually in the bare experience of this Dhamma. And when you're right in the middle of it, that's a fun place to be. It makes a whole retreat worthwhile. It makes being a monk, being a novice, being an Anagarika, just visiting this place, so worthwhile. You're actually getting something which is powerful. All because you followed the instructions. You just let go. You've stopped all these expectations of future, lingering on the past. Remember, it's the five hindrances which are the enemies. So know those five hindrances and know how they sometimes wheedle their way into your meditation. Expecting, wanting. Right, this is it, I'm going to get enlightened now. No way can you get enlightened in that way. That's not the chanda which leads to enlightenment. That's the chandaraga which leads to more rebirth and samsara, which leads to suffering. It's a chanda which leads to letting go. Letting go of doing so that knowing can become stronger and stronger. Letting go of doing means letting go of controlling, which comes from the self. It should be so clear to you. That's what an ego, atta, what's what it does. And this is the problem. This is what keeps you being reborn. This is the house builder. This idea of me. When there's a me, there's a mine. Where there's a mine, that's where you control. That's where you start doing things, forcing things, wanting things, because you think that's mine. That's my area to control. Even doing a little bit of anatta-sanya when you're meditating. It's not mine, so why should I control this? The future is not yours, the past is not yours. Don't own your past. That's again carrying the coffins of the past with you. Be someone who possesses nothing by having no being in there which is capable of possessing anything. Kill the possessor so there's no possessions possible. Kill the possessor which owns the past. Kill the possessor which owns your future. Kill those two. So all you have left is this present moment. In that present moment, the self can hardly survive. Hasn't got space to breathe. In this present moment, it can't even speak anymore. The self is silenced. When it's silenced, it's going to die soon. It dies temporarily, first of all. And you go into the deep blisses. And you realize that's actually quite a nice thing to kill this self. Or allow this self to cease. With all its doing and its complaining and praising and blaming and wanting and not wanting and coming and going and measuring and wanting to do this and wanting to get there and saying I'm good enough, saying I'm bad enough. That's just all the atta just nagging away. Don't have this nagging battle axe of a mind. Just shut it up. Do the job. Stop messing around. Apamādena sampādeta. Just put forth that chanda heedfully. Heeding the teachings, the instructions. But in particular, heeding the moment. Letting go of everything else. When you do this, you'll find this meditation isn't that hard. You'll find that getting into jhanas isn't that difficult. It's a well-worn path. These Aryas have been walking this path for 25, 26 centuries, even before then. They know exactly what needs to be done. And you could be one of those, if you follow those instructions. It's a path. And that path is open. open other doors to the deathless. The Buddha forced them open. We just have to walk. It's so simple, so easy for us. So get in there. You have this beautiful opportunity. You don't have to be distracted. Present moment awareness and silence, just make that your foundation. And when it's very, very strong, and you know it's strong because you've got this very clear mindfulness, and you've got a lot of joy, you're alert, you're awake, your food tastes beautiful, even just smelling the air in the monastery, it's just so fragrant. The flowers, the trees look so full of colour. You've become so mindful, so alert. Then you know you've got the mindfulness to follow the breath. Or do loving kindness meditation, or whatever it is you're going to do, but the breath is the best. And you just fill the mind with the breath. And just delight in the joys of breath meditation. To see the whole process just unfold. See the body disappear, the senses just close down. Go into the beautiful nimittas and through those nimittas into the jhanas. Enjoy the blisses based on mindfulness. Then you're on the path. Samadhi Magga, Asamadhi Kumagga. The samadhi is a path. No samadhi is no path at all. That's the talk. And Damien?
Bhagavato Sāvaka Sangho.